Our staff did a tremendous job. I thought we had the players ready to play. You know, and I think that a lot of that comes down to the ownership and the veteran players on the team. It's easy to maybe overlook an opponent. You're playing an FCS level team where you're Vegas has got you as a 40-plus point favorite and all that. So for our staff to get our players in the right frame of mind, for our veteran players to do that, for us to start fast, that was the challenge. Start fast, leave no doubt. I thought we did that.
Good morning. Welcome to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. I am your host, Raymond Parch III. The producer extraordinaire, the man behind the glass, the man on the ones and twos, Louis Prejean, joins me. And we are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's a Tuesday edition of the show. We got a great one for you. Plenty of guests, plenty of topics. And, of course, we'll get more of your reaction about the New Orleans Saints and what they face now moving forward. After the news was confirmed yesterday, after our show, that Drew Brees, one fact, does have ligament damage, will require surgery, is expected to miss 6 weeks at least, could be longer. The Breezy will have a second opinion done today because the Saints have a big decision to make. Do they just let him recover after surgery for 6 weeks, or do they officially put him on injured reserve? If they put him on injured reserve, he has to miss 8 weeks. And if you look at the schedule, does that jive for what the Saints need to do? We'll dive into more of that later, as well as LSU and Houston Astros. But I want to start things off with the Raging Cajun football team. 77-6 on Saturday versus poor Texas Southern. Poor Texas Southern. What do we make of Billy Napier's squad? You heard him say right there in his Monday press conference yesterday there at the Cox Communications building on campus that they executed the game plan the way they wanted to. They were focused. And he gave a lot of credit to his staff, from Rob Sell, the offensive coordinator, to Ron Roberts, DC, Michael Desimo, the whole nine yards, the whole group. Because the Cajuns did come out there and were immensely focused. You don't put up 77 points if you weren't. You don't have 15 different wide receivers catch the football. You don't have your fourth string running back lead the team in rushing. I want to say they also had four different quarterbacks take snaps in the game. Now, a lot of those guys that got receptions and some of those guys that even threw passes and even some of those guys that probably ran the ball may not be counted on the rest of the season. The Texas Southern game was a great game for getting everyone reps. Once again, don't forget the importance of the new redshirt rule in the NCAA, where that allows you to have someone play four games. You can play four games and still maintain your redshirt. So this is a great way to evaluate their players, their young players, what they have in their back pocket moving forward. Once again, 77-6, 77 points is the most points scored in the modern era for the Raging Cajuns. The 71-point victory is also the largest margin of victory in Raging Cajun history. Billy Napier talked about just how it was, it was a good day at Cajun Field, and he was appreciative of the turnout, despite the fact that in reality it was barely 18,000 people.
It's a good day, and we're very appreciative of the number of fans and students in the community that came out. I thought it was an exceptional atmosphere. It gets better. That's the second home game. It was even better this week, and we hope that that continues to improve. And certainly we're going to do our best to represent the community and put a good product on the field going forward.
So the turnout was better than it was the week before, but 18,000 strong, not necessarily awesome by any stretch of the imagination. But it was a good day as the Raging Cajuns committed themselves, were focused, and put together a dominant performance. Napier also talked about how a game like Texas Southern, the win over Texas Southern also gave his guys a chance to take a step forward in their own development and how they work and execute the scheme that both sides of the ball wants to execute this season.
Well, you know, guys took a step forward. Andre Jones was voted player of the week, on one of the players of the week on defense. You know, I think you see that Kendall Wilkerson is a defensive lineman that is emerging. I think a number of the young corners played good in the game. A.J. Washington. You know, I think that you see that some of those young receivers, like Brian Smith Jr. and Peter LeBlanc, are taking steps forward. You know, it was great to get Ave an opportunity to play, certainly able to play Clifton, able to play Chandler. You know, we played a lot of players that I think all that experience is going to benefit the team and them as individual players going forward.
Help them moving forward. And it's great that that does happen because this is a good time. Once again, look, we understand the limitations of Texas Southern. They've been one of the worst programs at that level and in the SWAC for a few years now. Even though they may have Power 5 transfers that have come in there and are playing for them, they're not a good program right now. They're just not. They're inferior competition. The Cajuns were expected to beat them by 40-plus points. They far surpassed that. So this is evaluation time, this past weekend was. That's what it's all about. It's evaluation time. Levi Lewis himself, the Raging Cajun starting quarterback, said that a game like this will only benefit the team later in the season.
It's really going to benefit us like later on in the season because we're going to need those guys to step up and play. And it's good to get that feeling. You know, they can revert back to the experience that they got out there tonight. And, it's going to be good for us. It's going to help us out a lot, you know, because we're going to see which guys are ready, which guys are not. You know, we're going to evaluate that tape tonight, you know, and we're going to put it all together and see what we got.
Put it all together and see what they got. What do they got on defense? That's been a question mark. Ron Roberts, defensive coordinator, second season at the helm there in that role for the Raging Cajuns, former very successful head coach at Southeastern Louisiana. You know, he tried to make strides last year with the defense. They struggled towards the tail end of the season. We know how they performed against App State in the conference championship game and how they performed in the bowl game versus Tulane. They're still a work in progress. They are getting better. Coach Billy Napier on Monday said as much, that he feels that the defense is making strides. It's improving.
I think that our defense is improving. You know, I think that's the biggest thing that we've learned is that we've made fundamental improvements. I think we're doing a good job mixing it up schematically as well. We're covering better. We're fitting runs better. But this will be as good of a challenge as we've had here. You know, this is a really good offensive line and a really good quarterback. And typically, those are the things that can give you issues. When a quarterback knows what he's doing and when they've got an offensive line that can get the ball to the second level.
Get the ball to the second level. So they are improving. You look, just take a glance, you're like, well, Ray, they won by 71 points. They only gave up the 6 points. Yeah, but once again, Texas Southern. And it's only going to become more challenging for the Raging Cajuns moving forward. Once again, we talked about it on yesterday's show. Look at the schedule. At a perennial bowl team out of the MAC this Saturday at Ohio on the road. Frank Solich is a very good coach, a damn good coach. Nebraska hasn't been the same since they fired him. Okay, they've been searching for guys ever since then. He's turned Ohio into one of the best teams out of the MAC. Then it's on the road at Georgia Southern, a 10-win team from a year ago. then it's home for a midweek matchup versus the defending conference champion App State, who defeated the Raging Cajuns twice last year, and then back on the road versus rival Arkansas State, which always lends itself to being an absolute bananas type of game. So the defense is going to get tested here in the next 4 weeks. So Raging Cajuns are 2-1. Great start to the season. They hung tough with Mississippi State, put together some fight, tried to rally in the second half of that game inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, but they had their own mental miscues they couldn't overcome. They had a sluggish start against Liberty, had a great strong second half to that game, and then they came out and was dominant from start to finish in all three phases of the game against Texas Southern. So this is what you want to see. Hang tough with a team out of the SEC, but as we've seen, Mississippi State may be a mediocre SEC team. That's not to take anything away from the Raging Cajuns. The reality is that Mississippi State is going to be lucky to be a six-win team this year. Okay? Don't be surprised if the Raging Cajuns have a better record than Mississippi State does when it's all said and done, despite the fact that Mississippi State has a quarterback who became a meme almost overnight on Saturday for his helicopter landing. But you hang tough with an SEC West opponent. You overcome a first-half struggles or first-half sluggishness versus an inferior opponent like Liberty to pull away and have a very convincing home victory. And then you dominate another inferior opponent. So you get a little confidence about yourself. You're feeling good. You're 2-1. The real test is going to be coming up. And that'll be at Ohio this Saturday. There have been a rash of some injuries to the running back room. They're so deep at the running back position that they can overcome it, but Coach Napier talked about those rash of injuries to the running back room and how they're dealing with it.
They've had a rash of injuries at running back, but they've got tons of proven players, and I think anticipate getting some of those guys back this week. So the combination of all of it is really what it comes down to. I think the quarterback distributes the ball well. He makes a really good decision, takes what the defense gives him. Certainly a great challenge for us, and we look forward to that.
That's my bad. That's Billy Napier talking about the running backs for Ohio and how they've had a rash of injuries. We'll get more to the Bobcats and what kind of challenges they pose for Billy Napier and his staff after this quick timeout. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game.
I'll say the preparation is going to be the same, you know, but I say Thursday, you know, the way we, how we practice, we put the music in there, try to make a crowd know us, try to make it hostile for us. But I think it's, the preparation is going to be the same, just more high intensity, knowing that we're going into somebody's house and we're going to war.
Going to someone's house and going to war, says Levi Lewis, Raging Cajun starting quarterback. UL takes on Ohio in their first true road test of the season this Saturday. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Ohio is 1-2 right now. They started off the year defeating Rhode Island, lost to Pitt out of the ACC, and then lost a shootout to one of their arch rivals, the Marshall Thundering Herd, a game that was in the mid-30s over this past weekend. The other big rival for Ohio is Miami of Ohio, another MAC school. So they're 1-2, but you shouldn't take them lightly. This is their record over the last 4 years. Under Frank Solich, who took over in 2005, this team is routinely in the mix for winning their division, the Mid-American East, which they've won 4 times. They're always in the bowl games. 10 since Solich took over, including 4 straight years of being in a bowl game the past 4 years. Last year, there were 9-4. The year before that, 9-4. The year before that, 8-6. The year before that, 8-5. They are consistently a very good program in the MAC. that hovers around 9 games a year. So don't let that fool you that they're 1-2, because one of their losses is to Pitt, and the other one is against a rival in Marshall. It will be at their place, cross-country trip. And yes, I include cross-country as going from the South all the way up to the Midwest. As someone who's driven that trip, who's drove that trip before, yeah, that's a cross-country trip. So it's going to be a challenge, because for Ohio, this is a huge game for them as well to get back to 500. So they can't be playing around either with the Raging Cajuns. Billy Napier talked about just how much of a challenge it is going to be for his Raging Cajuns this Saturday when they take on the Bobcats of Ohio.
We've got a heck of a challenge in front of us this week. We play really good Ohio football program that is well coached. They've got a great blueprint. They've played winning, consistent football. Coach Solich has done a great job of creating stability there as he's built that program. They're undefeated at home last year. This is a hard place to play. It will challenge all the intangibles that we worked hard to build in the offseason.
All the intangibles that they've built. You can make the argument that what Frank Solich has done at Ohio is very much the type of program that Billy Napier and his staff would like to have at UL. Consistently winning 8 to 9 games a year, competing for their division championship, playing for conference championships, and going to bowl games and winning bowl games. That's what you want when you're one of these mid-major programs, and Ohio is the epitome of a consistent mid-major successful football program. Consistent. Always in the mix for a division championship. Always going to a bowl game. Their off years are usually a 6-win season where they don't get to go to a bowl game. This is the type of consistency that Billy Napier and his staff would love for them to have here in Cajun country. You can just hear in his voice the kind of respect he has for Ohio and for what Frank Solich has done there. You can tell. You can just tell. And that's the type of program that they're wanting to develop. And they face a very good quarterback, and the defense is going to be tested because they're facing a quarterback in Nathan Warrick, who's coming off being the MAC East Division Player of the Week. Despite having the loss, he puts up huge numbers, and this is what Coach Napier had to say about the Bobcats' leader on offense.
Well, I think he's very smart. He's very efficient. Certainly well respected, even nationally. And he's a mobile guy. You know, he took an 80-yarder to the house against Marshall this past week. I think he had a 70-yard run against Pitt. So this is a guy who is a dual threat and does a lot for their offense. You know, he gets them in the right play. Certainly a very accurate passer. Makes good decisions. Takes care of the ball. And he can take off and run off.
He can take off and run with it. In 3 games this season, 580 yards passing, 5 touchdowns, no interceptions, completion percentage 62.2. He also is a threat to run the ball, has 150 yards rushing with another 2 touchdowns. He guides the Bobcats offense. So that'll be the big challenge for this weekend for me. Can they stop Nathan Warrick? Can the Raging Cajuns defense and Ron Roberts, with his scheme and his players, do enough to slow down Nathan Warrick? Because if Nathan Warrick goes off, it's going to be tough for the Raging Cajuns to win this game. It's a tough road test. If they win this game, it could be a very good season, maybe even special season for the Raging Cajuns, but it won't be easy by any stretch of the imagination. We got to take a timeout here on RP3 and Company. When we come back, New Orleans Saints talk. Right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III. This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. led off today's show talking Raging Cajuns football. Billy Napier held his press conference yesterday, recapping the week, the weekend that was, the 77-6 victory over Texas Southern to improve the Raging Cajuns to 2-1 on the year, and then looking ahead against their first big test of the season, not counting the opener against Mississippi State, as they travel on the road to take on a very good Ohio Bobcats team. Right now, though, it's time to go back and visit the New Orleans Saints. We talked about it on yesterday's show. Speculation was, early reports rather were, that Drew Brees had ligament damage in his thumb. We talked about that on the show yesterday, that he was going to be sidelined for a little while. Sure enough, those reports were confirmed yesterday. Brees is going to miss at least 6 weeks. At least 6 weeks. Some doctors have speculated that usually takes longer. Some players have speculated that takes longer. It would have been better if it was a broken bone. Instead, it is a torn ligament. It is damaged. They need to repair it. Now, Drew Brees is getting a second opinion. Not that he doesn't believe that he has ligament damage, but he wants to get a second opinion just to see if it's possible for him to come back sooner before he has surgery. The Saints will have a decision to make here, because if you place a player on the injured reserve list, he has to be out for 8 weeks. That's the rules. So even though Drew Brees' surgery, the initial reports are that he has to miss at least 6 weeks. If the Saints put him on IR, he has to sit out 8. That's a couple more games. I can guarantee you Drew Brees doesn't want that. Sean Payton doesn't want that. They just don't. But that's why you see Drew getting a second opinion here on his thumb. Once again, ligament damage in his thumb on his throwing hand that caused him to be unable to grip the football during Sunday's game there at the Los Angeles Rams. Coach Sean Payton yesterday during his conference call, because remember, the Saints remained out on the West Coast. They did not fly back home because they had to play the Rams this past Sunday, and they have to play the Seahawks this coming Sunday. So they're staying out on the West Coast. He had his teleconference on Monday, and this is the update that he gave on number 9.
Yeah, look, they're still in the midst of evaluating it. He's had one opinion, having a second opinion, and as soon as we know something that we can confirm, then we'll report it. But right now, it's kind of, you know, the stage we're in.
They're hoping that the second opinion is going to give them more positive news. Okay? That's what they're hoping for. Plus, you just want to be thorough. But it's not like you're going to go get a second opinion. They're going to say he's going to be back in 2 weeks. I hate to be that guy. And I'm trying not to be insensitive about the situation. But he's not going to go to a doctor that's going to tell him, yeah, you can come back in 2 weeks, Drew. You're good to go. Let's just wrap it up. Let's put some Tussin on it, and you'll be fine. No, that's not how this is going to work, okay? I know they're hopeful, and they're hoping that they can find some type of solution, but this is ligament damage in your thumb. The man could not grip the damn football during the game. There's going to be no quick solution here. You're not going to be able to go get a shot, okay? You're not trying to fight the flu bug, okay? This is not what this is. He'll get a second opinion, but he's at least going to be out for 6 weeks. With Drew out of the game on Sunday, offensive line did not play well. Teddy Bridgewater did not play well. Wide receivers did not play well. The group that played well for a good portion of the game was the defense, in particular the pass rushers, and then the secondary fell apart by letting Cooper Kupp and Brandon Cooks just run all over them. You watch the game and you're like, coverage. That guy's open. Jared Goff, look, when you watch Jared Goff play, it's not like watching Drew Brees. It's not like watching Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers or back in the day Peyton Manning. He's a good quarterback. He's not a dominant passer, okay? He's not a guy that's going to set the world on fire. And when you watch the Rams play, you're like, hey, he's going to hit this guy. Don't know what the hell's going on with the Saints secondary. They were out of position. We had callers talk about it yesterday, about the fact that they're switching them up. They're taking these guys who are more adept to playing man coverage and putting them in zone, and they're getting torched for it. There's some truth to that. So they had a lot of soul-searching with watching the tape. This is what Sean Payton had to say his observations were after they broke down the game film from Sunday's game.
I thought we played real well defensively, particularly in the first half. Got away from us later in the fourth quarter, but, you know, it was the type of game I felt that was necessary for us to play, and you know, it was low-scoring. Offensively, I didn't think we played particularly well up front. I think the penalties were a factor yesterday, just the amount. It negated three different games of more than 15 yards. So that's something we got to clean up on, and obviously quickly.
Obviously quickly. Yeah, the offensive line, woof. Offensive line did not play well. Andrus Peat did not play well. Wolford did not play well. They just didn't. Once again, the Rams have a formal pass rush. They have the absolute fiend, the best defensive player in the league, lining up across the defensive line in Aaron Donald. I get it. But offensive line played poorly. And when you have a guy like Teddy Bridgewater back there, who does not get the ball out as quickly as Drew, and to be fair, there may be only like two guys in the league that get the ball out of their hands quicker than Drew does. That's Brady and Rodgers. Everyone else does not. He needs a little bit more time. You need your offensive line to step up. And that was the biggest disappointment for me, despite the injury on Sunday, was the team didn't rally around Teddy Bridgewater. They just didn't. Our quarterback's out. We got to step up. This guy is not the same player, but he can help us, lead us to victory. Let's step up. We got to give it an extra 10%. We got to maul that defensive line. We got to make sure not to drop balls. We got to make sure not to commit stupid penalties. They didn't do that. They were dejected and never recovered from Drew Brees leaving that game. Never. So as mediocre as Teddy Bridgewater looked yesterday, looked on Sunday rather, and he has to be held accountable for his play, the offensive line did him no favors. The wide receiving corps did him no favors. And where the hell was the leadership on the offensive side of the ball? And I'll say this, and I made this point in the offseason. The Saints are going to miss Mark Ingram's leadership. Not his production on the field, not the fact that he was a tough runner. You can replace that. You can find a guy like Latavius Murray, who's a big back, to give you those tough yards. Okay? Mark Ingram would have been the guy that would have stepped up, because he would have been the veteran guy on the offensive side of the ball, the one that everyone looks to, the guy that was in the locker room, that was the glue guy in the locker room, and he would have rallied the troops once number 9 went down. But you wanted to save money and not give him the extra $1 million. So he's in Baltimore helping Lamar Jackson look amazing. You could have used Mark Ingram on Sunday. That was my biggest point the whole offseason. You can find running backs to replace Mark Ingram's production. Alvin Kamara is special. Alvin Kamara is special when he has someone else to handle the big thunder load. There were thunder and lightning. I'm not saying Mark Ingram would have gave you any yards. Hell, Mark Ingram could have been stuffed on every single play he had on Sunday in the Rams, and they could have still lost that game. But you wouldn't have looked as just lifeless on offense. Wouldn't have happened. That's what Mark brought to the table. That's why he was so revered in the locker room. That's why when he did not get re-signed by the Saints, you saw social media by players like Cam Jordan and Michael Thomas and others be pissed off that Mark was not going to be part of this team. Once again, it's not about production sometimes. It's about what cats bring to the table. And sometimes it's got nothing to do with a stat sheet. And that's what Mark Ingram brought, and I made it the point in the offseason. And my biggest worry with Drew out is not Teddy Bridgewater, because I think Sean Payton is smart enough to design plays to help him. Okay? They'll design plays to help him deal with this offensive game plan a little bit more. Offensive line's got to get better. I mean, offensive line looked terrible. Let's be real. They look bad. But I think you can make some adjustments there. I think you can do something with Teddy. You have to change up your game plan a little bit, change up the offense. Maybe try to get Jared Cook involved. He was a big priority in free agency. Hasn't really been a factor at all in the first two games of the season. But I stand by what I said. Mark Ingram provided something else to this team. He provided a veteran voice. Like Cam Jordan gives them on defense, that was what Mark was on offense. Breeze was the leader of the team, but Mark Ingram was your cheerleader in that locker room. I just don't think if he was on the team, you'd see that much of a lifeless performance. They probably would have still lost the game, but I don't think it would have been as of lifeless performance on the offensive side of the ball if Mark was still there. Let's head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Our day's about to get a whole lot better. Halftime is on the line. Halftime, good morning to you, brother.
Good morning. Good morning, RP3. I have more of a slash question comment.
Go ahead, brother.
I love the topic you talk about Mark Ingram. I was a Mark Ingram fan, and I agree with you. I think Mark Ingram, I used to tell people, if you would take Ezekiel Elliott and put him with the Saints, and you take Mark Ingram and put him with the Cowboys with that offensive line, I think Mark Ingram would do the same thing. You know, it takes some holes to be open. Mark Ingram is a good back. He's not a slasher or a cutter, but he's a good back. Well, my question to you is, I've heard that if Mark Ingram would have just waited, he'd have got his money, because he left, but I mean, more money than I'll see. But for contract-wise, it wasn't that much more money he left for. And I heard if he'd have just waited a little, he would have got his money. That's kind of the little rumor I'm hearing. I want to know if you could look into that, if that's true or anything. Because they was going to make room to give him his money if he'd have just waited a little longer. And I think it was more of trying to make sure Michael Thomas get his money first. And second, I agree with you. That was my question. And I agree with you on that game, that Mark Ingram, they probably still wouldn't have won the game, but it wouldn't have looked hopeless. And you could see in the game where people say Bridgewater looked spooked. To me, Bridgewater looked spooked. To me, it was just like the players, their heads were hanging. It was just like no hope, no fight, you know. Where, again, if Breeze would have still been there, they might have lost the game, you know. I mean, the way things were going, but it would have still been a fight. That's what I didn't see in that game, a fight at the end. That's all I got off. I want to hear what you have to say. Thanks.
Appreciate you, Halftime. Have a great day, my friend. I want to touch on what Halftime said there. The Ingram contract situation going back is interesting. I'd heard that, too, that they were hoping that Mark would wait. But here's the problem. Mark was a free agent. And he had other teams that were coveting him. If the Saints really wanted him, why not lock him up? And it came down to years on the contract. The money is about the same. The actual money, what they paid Latavius Murray and what they're paying Mark Ingram, what Baltimore is paying Mark Ingram, is about the same. It's essentially a wash. It came down to the years on the contract. And I'll say this. If you really wanted Mark Ingram, you could have had Mark Ingram. If you really wanted to have Mark Ingram re-signed, you would have signed him up before his contract ended. Okay? This falls on the Saints. Okay? Mark Ingram wanted to stay. There was no contract. At the end of the day, as much as he loves those guys in that locker room, and as much as he loves being a Saint, he's going to take care of him and his family. And if another team comes up there and offers him the money that he wants, and your hometown team ain't offering you nothing, or you're still a few million apart, then what are you going to do? This is from CBS Sports Report. Quote, as a matter of fact, if the suspension didn't happen, Ingram might have already been on the trading block. According to NFL.com, the only reason the Saints hadn't been shopping Ingram around over the past few weeks, this is an article from last year, is because the team knew that the suspension was coming and trading a guy with a looming suspension is nearly impossible. That was John Breach, the author of the article there from CBS Sports. So there you go. That tells you everything. The Saints had no desire. Bringing back Mark Ingram was not a priority. They would have traded him a season ago if it wasn't for the suspension, the four-game suspension that he was serving. So that tells you everything that you need to know there. As for Teddy Bridgewater, look, I'm not ready to throw him out with the garbage. I think it's premature. I think you get inserted to a game and your offensive line is struggling and the rest of the offense is deflated from losing their leader. That puts Teddy in a poor spot. And I know people are going to bring up last season's game against the Carolina Panthers. I was at that game inside the Superdome covering it. He had Michael Thomas and that was it. Everyone else was resting because it was the postseason. And he was going against the number ones for Carolina, and they had nothing to lose. Got to give Teddy a couple weeks here. Now, it's a gauntlet, obviously, okay? But this is where you lean on that leadership, and that's what Sean Payton himself brought up yesterday during his teleconference.
Well, look, I think you focus on the things you can control, and I think that, you know, this is where you lean on leadership and you get ready to, you know, have a good week of practice. It's kind of the nature of our league sometimes. You know, you come in on a Monday, you got a handful of things you're having to address, and that's part of the deal.
That's part of the deal. So the guys have got to step up. O-line, wide receiving core, and Teddy Bridgewater and company, and it starts this Sunday against the Seattle Seahawks. We got to take a quick timeout. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
RP3.
Welcome back to the show. We got a new poll question up, but I'll give you the results from yesterday's poll. We asked you, very simple question. Does the NFL hate the New Orleans Saints? Yes or no? 76.5% of you said yes. Bravo, Houdat Nation. New poll is up at 1037thegame.com right now. With Drew Brees having to miss six games, how many wins do the Saints need to get in that stretch to remain in playoff contention? 5, 4, 3, or 2. Those are your options. How many wins do the Saints need to get while Drew Brees is out to remain in playoff contention? Go vote right now at 1037thegame.com. Good morning. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. I am your host, Raymond Parch III, the one and only, the producer extraordinaire, the man on the ones and twos, Louis Prejean. Louis, grab that microphone. How you feeling, man? Second week in as the full-time morning show producer. How you feeling?
I feel great. It's an honor to work with you, Ray.
Oh, thank you.
And,
thank you.
You know, I did say last week that I was
It is your privilege to work with me. You're right.
I'm going... I said last week I was going to retract my statement from Friday about me being the Batman to your Robin, and I'm going to do that officially right here, right now, on 103.7, The Game. I retract my statement.
Thank you, Louis.
I'm at your service, Ray.
we're going to have fun together. I can tell that already. We spent hour number one talking a little Raging Cajun football. Billy Napier and his staff. Very successful weekend this past weekend with a rout of Texas Southern. Historic night. Most points scored in the modern era. Largest margin of victory ever. We also touched on, of course, New Orleans Saints. And where do they go from here? I'm not ready to throw Teddy Bridgewater out with the bathwater. Nor should you be. I had some people texting me. Hey, you should do this. As one person gave me the most intriguing text so far about the Saints situation. That the Saints should trade for Eli Manning. Whoa. Ah, I got Lewis's attention there. What now? What? What? Two-time Super Bowl winning champion? New Orleans native? Huh? Change the scenery? Could he do well? By the way, the person who texted me that, I'm going to give him some love right now. For the bold idea is my co-host for Chip Shots with Rob Spires. Rob Spires. That's who texted me that. Oh, we got a phone call. Someone wants to talk about that Eli Manning trade possibility. It's interesting, though, isn't it? It's interesting. Look, the talk coming out of New York is, will the Giants bench Eli Manning? Start the young gun. They have so many injuries. Eli has not looked great, let's be honest. He's looked mediocre for a couple seasons now. But the talk is that Eli Manning is going to be benched, the two-time Super Bowl champion, the multiple Pro Bowler, is going to be benched for the young man, David Jones, that they drafted in the first round in the top 10 out of Duke. Could that be a possibility? I don't know. But I think you can't throw out Teddy just yet. You got to let Teddy, you got to give Teddy Bridgewater some time here. I know Saints fans will be impatient about that, but you have to give him some time and see what you got. Okay? You have to give him some time and see if Sean Payton can tailor the offense more around his game. Let's head out to the Arco Equipment Hotline. Welcome on Roger to the show. Roger, good morning to you, brother. How are you?
I'm doing good. I just wanted to call and just kind of give my take on the Teddy Bridgewater.
Go ahead, you know, my man.
I was discussing with some guys on my job last night. I think what a lot of people got to realize is that this offense is tailor-made for Drew Brees. Sean Payton will tweak and retrofit as much as he can to play to the strengths of Teddy Bridgewater. I think what you're seeing out there was Teddy Bridgewater out there trying to do his best Drew Brees impression, because the offense, that game plan was fitted for Drew Brees' skill set. And I think a lot of people, what they really love about Taysom Hill and versus Teddy Bridgewater in the preseason was what Taysom Hill brought to the Saints as far as the quarterback position. But they got to realize Sean Payton has been developing plays for Taysom Hill longer than Teddy Bridgewater. So I think he's going to do the same thing for Teddy Bridgewater, where you can see him have some of that success that we see that Taysom Hill have when his numbers call. So I think a lot of people just have to really just give this guy time. And I've said it once and I've said it again, Drew Brees was not Drew Brees when he first got to New Orleans in 2006. It took Drew Brees, you know, a couple of years before he was, I mean, he was good, but, I mean, he wasn't the Drew Brees he is now. And it took Drew Brees a couple of years. It was years. Drew Brees had 35 touchdowns and, 12 or 14 interceptions. And, you know, as he started to gain, you know, all his knowledge of the offense and all of the intricacies, he really started, you know, putting up 40 touchdowns and 10 interceptions. And things like that. I mean, everybody expected him to be Drew Brees. He's not Drew Brees. When Tom Brady, which, I mean, I'm not a fan of the picture, when he shut it down, the next person will not be. Andrew Luck was not the next Peyton Manning. Everybody has to realize that the next quarterback will never replace a Hall of Famer because the skill set is different. And that's what they got to realize. Sean Payton will tailor this offense to fit Teddy Bridgewater. And if he still doesn't succeed and it's tailored for him, then I think you have to worry about it And I wouldn't be surprised to see him starting to maybe look at Taysom. But as far as I can, I see people got to give him the opportunity to get in there, first work with the guys, let the guys get used to catching a ball with that type of velocity, and let them start telling that offense and get the offensive line used to blocking for him instead of Drew Brees.
Roger,
and I'll just hang up and listen.
I appreciate it, man. Look, Roger makes a valid point, because Saints fans view Drew as what he did when he came to the Saints. But look what he did in San Diego. First year he became a starter. 2001, he only got some playing time. First year as a full starter in San Diego, only 3,200 yards passing, 17-16 touchdown to interception ratio. His next year, he had 15 interceptions to only 11 touchdowns. Now, he had the really good year in 2004, but only 3,100 yards, 27 touchdowns, 7 picks. In his last year in San Diego, before he got the shoulder injury, 3,500 yards, 24 touchdowns, 15 picks. He never threw for more than 3,600 yards in San Diego. His first year with the Saints, 4,400 yards, 26 touchdowns, 11 picks. And then remember, the next year, he still threw for 4,400 yards, but had 28 touchdowns to 18 picks. Breeze had some years there where he threw a lot of interceptions. Okay? But they kept tailoring the offense around Drew and what Drew does really well. And Rodgers is right. You got to give him – you got to have faith in Sean Payton as your head coach and as your offensive guru, and you got to have faith in Teddy Bridgewater. Sean Payton signed off, wanted Teddy Bridgewater back, made it a priority through the front office to make him the highest-paid backup in the league. Sean Payton sees something in Teddy Bridgewater. Sean Payton has faith in Teddy Bridgewater. Sean Payton also had faith in Drew Brees when no one else did, when the Miami Dolphins didn't sign him because he didn't pass their physical. Remember that. Drew Brees was a guy that most teams didn't want. Don't ever forget that. But Sean Payton wanted him. And Sean Payton said, that guy can be great. If my offense... That guy can be great. Remember, Sean Payton's also the same guy that's developed other players as well. Now, we can talk about the backup quarterback never really being developed in New Orleans. That's a valid argument. You can make that point. But Sean Payton's also the same guy that helped build up Tony Romo from undrafted rookie to Pro Bowl starting quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. That's before he came to the Saints. Remember that as well. So, no matter what your skill set is, Sean Payton is smart enough to find a way. And fully expect, if Sean Payton adjusts his offense to tailor what Teddy Bridgewater brings to the table, they could win some games. This isn't abandoning their offensive philosophy, but look what Harbaugh is doing in Baltimore. You think that's the offense Harbaugh wants to run in Baltimore with Lamar Jackson? No. But they drafted Lamar Jackson. They're like, well, hell, let's use his skill set. He's a dual-threat quarterback. Baltimore's 2-0. Lamar Jackson is putting up huge numbers. Made the change, how they do things, changed their offensive philosophy to suit the talent they have on their team, to suit the guy who's leading their offense. Saints can do the same thing, make some minor changes to the playbook, more importantly, make some minor changes to how they call games, do that, and they could have a winning mark during the 6-game stretch, at least, maybe even more, while Brees is out. I mean, look, at the end of the day, Saint fan, this is what you need from Teddy Bridgewater. You need him to be a 500 record quarterback. That's all you need. Look at your schedule. That's all you need. Because if Drew's out for 6 games, you need Teddy Bridgewater to be 3-3. Because then you'll be 4-4. If Drew Brees comes back after 6 weeks, you'll be 4-4. And I know what you're saying. Well, Ray, that's terrible. You're right. It's mediocre. It's average. Have you seen the NFC South this year? Do the Falcons scare you? I know Julio Jones scored that long touchdown. the other day. Did the Dirty Bird scare you at all? No. The Bucks? Nope. Carolina Panthers? And whatever bonnet Cam Newton stole from the thrift store to wear? No. None of these things scare you. Oh, here's the other thing. If Teddy Bridgewater under center can lead the New Orleans Saints to a 3-3 record, they'll be 4-4 overall. You realize that if that's the case, then Drew Brees would come back and be the quarterback for the team as they play every single division team. All the divisional opponents are on the back end of the schedule this year, guys. The only one that they'll have to face while Drew Brees is out is Tampa Bay. That's it. 6 weeks. If Drew Brees comes back after 6 weeks, they'll play the Falcons twice, the Panthers twice, and the Bucks once. Oh, and they'll get an Indianapolis Colts team that's going to be without Andrew Luck on the back end of the schedule as well. You need Teddy Bridgewater to be a .500 quarterback for you. Hell, in a 6-game stretch, if he goes 4-2, that's a win, because then you'll have a winning record. You need Teddy Bridgewater to be able to quarterback your team to good enough to be just a .500 ball club through this tough stretch, because you can still win the division, and then you'll have a healthy Drew Brees coming back. You can win your division, host a home playoff game, and then march to the postseason. The sky's not falling. And Sean Payton is smart enough to make the adjustment to tailor his offense more to the skill set of Teddy Bridgewater. Expecting Teddy to be just like Drew is unrealistic and unfair to Teddy. Make the adjustments. Taylor made the offense more for Teddy Bridgewater instead of Drew Brees, and you'll give your chance, you give your shot, you give your team the opportunity to continue winning ball games. We got to take a quick timeout. LSU conversation coming up right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game.
Derek Mason has a lot of respect for myself. I think he's an excellent football coach. I knew him. He was at Stanford. We go to the SEC coaching meetings. He's one of the best guys there. He's easy to talk to. He's a good guy. He's very personal, and I wish him the very best. I think he's an excellent coach.
That's Coach O, Ed Orgeron, the head man in charge for LSU, talking about the amount of respect, mutual respect, that he has for Vanderbilt coach Derek Mason, former NFL star turned collegiate coach. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can catch us on Stadium Network as well, 32.1. That's the simulcast. If you want to see this big, beautiful mug on television, flip over now. Or you can find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. LSU opens up SEC play this Saturday at Vanderbilt. Vandy, of course, is winless on the season, as they typically are. That's not a shot at the Commodores. Vanderbilt struggles in football, and they always have. It's just how the program is. They're a great baseball school, and sometimes very good in men's basketball. Football, not so much. But Coach O's got respect for them, and even though they may be struggling once again, the Commodores, Coach O and his staff, they're not going to be taking them lightly by any stretch of the imagination. This is what the scouting report already says on Vandy, that Coach O has already looked over, he and his staff. Scouting report on Vanderbilt. We'll get to that later. So, LSU takes on Vanderbilt this Saturday. Once again, pregame will start at 9 a.m. Kick at 11 right here on 103.7 The Game. Coach O did give plenty of updates on the Tigers themselves. He did break the news yesterday during his Monday presser that Todd Harris, defensive back who got injured against Northwestern State, was on the field for quite a while before being helped off the field, is going to now be sidelined for the remainder of the year.
Yeah, Todd's going to be out for a year, and we'll not be back with us this year, and hopefully we can use him as a redshirt. No, we will use this year as a redshirt year for him. Unfortunate. It was an unfortunate accident. He just landed on the ground wrong.
Yeah, he landed on the ground wrong. It looked bad. I was there for the LSU game on Saturday, and it looked bad when he fell. So he's going to be out for the year. Unfortunate. That kind of hurts their depth in the secondary. Improving their depth elsewhere, though, is the offensive line. Coach O talked about Ed Ingram. Remember, Ed was suspended for off-the-field conduct. He had some domestic abuse, some physical assault charges brought against him last year. He was suspended for the whole season, but he is a monstrous, immensely talented interior lineman on the offensive side of the ball. And there's a possibility that he could come back. It has not been confirmed yet, even though some reports did come out yesterday that LSU expects him to return to the team maybe as early as later this week. Coach O talked about adding Ed Ingram back to the team.
Yeah, we're hearing very positive news. We have nothing official. I expect to know something in the near future, the next couple of days. And when I do hear something official, I'll bet to let you guys know officially.
Now, what kind of shape is Ed Ingram in? He didn't play at all last year. Coach O talked about it at the presser yesterday that, you know, Ed's been working out. Well, it's one thing to be working out at your local gym or lifting weights at the house. It's another thing to be in the program for LSU. So even with Ed Ingram possibly coming back, he's not going to be a plug-and-play starter, but he would give them depth. And you're going to have to whip him into football shape as well. I mean, it's just going to have to happen. So even though Ingram could provide them some necessary depth across the offensive line, expecting him to come in and be a starter right off the bat is unrealistic. But having him come back could give the depth to the offensive line to continue to protect Joe Burrow, who has played himself into becoming a Heisman Trophy candidate. The offensive line has to continue doing their job, keeping him clean. But Coach O talked about it at yesterday's presser. Joe is going to have to do his job as well to protect himself.
I have to remind Joe to run out of bounds. He ain't going to run out of bounds, but I'm about to remind him to do it. And Joe means a lot to our football team. Joe is becoming an elite quarterback. And I've been a part of three Heisman Trophy winners, Gino Toretta, Carson Palmer, and Matt Leinart. And I'm starting to see a lot of similarities, or maybe some things even better than I remember those guys doing. So he can become that quarterback. Still has a ways to go, but he's going to have to protect himself.
Needs to protect himself. Coach O also had to say that he's been immensely pleased with the way Joe Burrow has performed so far this season through three games, but they need to run the ball more.
Very pleased with the play of Joe Burrow. Joe made a couple of throws out there that you just go wild. Did you turn back the film time and time again? So how did he do that? But tremendous athlete, tremendous touch, tremendous will to win. Very pleased with the way Steve Ensminger and Joe Brady is calling our offense. Obviously, lights out right now on offense, throwing the football. We got to get better running the football. We got to get better up front on defense and stopping the run and playing out gaps. And we look forward to this week.
Looking forward to this week. Once again, LSU will open up SEC play this Saturday on the road at Vanderbilt. 9 a.m. pregame show, 11 a.m. kick. You can listen to it live right here on 103.7 The Game. And then following the completion of the LSU game will be a special edition of Under the Dome with C.D. Clint Domain. We got to take a timeout when we return. Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com will join us right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7. Good morning. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Talked a little LSU football before the break. Coach Ed O turning his attention to Vanderbilt. Has nothing but respect for the Commodores and much, much more. We're going to keep the LSU talk going, but we're going to hit it from the recruiting angle as we do every Tuesday morning right here on RP3 and Company with one of the best in the business. He works for TigerDetails.com. It's the one and only, our good friend, Jarrett Rozier. Jarrett, how you doing this morning, brother?
Hey, man, I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself?
Doing well, man, doing well. So want to get right to it. Look, it was a one-sided affair, as we know, there at Tiger Stadium on Saturday night. It became a blowout there in the second half. But I would assume high school prospects, they like seeing a team, especially offensive players, like to see a team that scores a bunch of points and likes to see and be in the house to watch a game where true freshmen score touchdowns as well, which occurred by three different true freshmen on Saturday for LSU. So, brother, tell us, with all the prospects that were in Tiger Stadium over the weekend for the 2020 class and beyond, what kind of impression did LSU make on these big-time prospects on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a big day. There were a lot of different players on hand. You had, you know, some of the usual suspects. I think Jaqueline Roy, who committed to LSU late in the summer, is just going to kind of set up camp over there and see quite a few of the Tigers games throughout this season. And you had some notable either uncommitted guys or guys who are currently committed to other schools that I thought the atmosphere and the big win were really helpful in the recruitment. I'm at a point where you look at this class and there's only two spots left, and we've been talking about how close to complete this class has been for a long time, and then there are still so many top prospects that LSU would have loved to have had in any other given year that they're now still talking with for these last two spots. And I feel like it's going to continue to be extremely interesting, you know, as the weather gets a little bit colder and we get into this final week leading up to the early signing period, to see who can actually fit into this class, because right now so many of these prospects are so excited about what's happening and the relationships are so strong that it looks like they could certainly, if there weren't a limit to 25 scholarship players for a class, that they could certainly bring in well more than that. Jacobian Guillory is a guy that we've talked about before, a Louisiana guy who's he won't make his decision until the winter with his All-America game, and Alabama made a really strong push with him, and for a long time it seemed like Alabama and LSU were kind of the leaders. He was there again on Saturday and seemed like he had a great time. LSU seems like they can continue to make an impact in his recruitment, so he's going to be one, even with just two spots left in this class, worth continuing to watch all the way up to that announcement date. Ty Crawford, a guy we've talked about before, the offensive lineman currently committed to Arkansas, as LSU continues to try to find some more offensive line help. The recruitment of Ty Crawford up in Carthage, Texas by LSU, I think, continues to gain traction. And he was on hand again Saturday and appeared to come away from that visit impressed. And when you see some of the offensive line improvements in pass protection, you see a guy like Dare Rosenthal having a big day. Austin Deculus has progressed quite a bit from last year to this year. Those are some good selling points for him that I think LSU has a chance to flip him at some point, particularly as much as we've talked about watching how LSU performs this fall for some of the guys currently committed to LSU. Arkansas having a bit of a rough season could make it increasingly difficult for Ty Crawford to overlook what LSU is doing and stick with the Razorbacks. One guy that we hadn't heard much about that was on campus, Donnell Harris, an outside linebacker from Miami, who he and his family were on campus for a good portion of the day Saturday. And actually when the buses arrived with Coach O and the staff and players, Donnell and family were there to be greeted by O right off the bus, which I think left an impact, as did a lot of that day. These guys really on both sides of the ball, you know, a guy like Donnell, seeing all of those linebackers get involved and be used in, you know, in a lot of different ways. Guys like Damone Clark, a sophomore, you know, some inside, some outside, and just some of the things they're able to do there, I think, make an impact. And obviously, when you're scoring 65 points and you have Joe Burrow with 4-1 Heisman odds now after three games, that's extremely exciting for all of these offensive guys. We talked a lot about that after the Texas game, and with each game, it just continues to build that much stronger of an impression, and that's something that I was talking about going into that Northwestern State game. Is as much as a lot of thought might have been, okay, they can just kind of coast through this and get away with the win, stay healthy, and all of those things. I don't think you're going to see in a one-sided game LSU continue to ride Burrow and company deep into the game. You saw, you know, it was a little bit tighter than anticipated for a while, and so Joe played a couple possessions in the second half and then rested for most of that second half. But as far as the first half, I think you're going to continue to see them throw the ball around, both because it's what they do and they want to stay in a rhythm, but also I think they kind of realize the impact that what they're doing offensively is making on the recruiting trail. And seeing Joe and seeing Joe's performances on Saturdays and then his name all week long in these Heisman conversations, I think, is a really valuable recruiting tool for them long term. And so if he can go out there, even in a lopsided game, and complete 80% of his passes and you know, throw for 200 or 300 yards in a half or a little over a half, as fun as that is for fans to watch on Saturday, it's that much more exciting potentially for prospects who are considering being a part of that offense for years to come.
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com. Jarrett, let's talk a little bit about, you know, you've mentioned it before. We continue to talk about running backs and O-lines, but it does seem like LSU is still putting an emphasis when it comes to recruiting on the defensive front. Why is that?
Yeah, I mean, they are very involved. I mentioned Donnell Harris, a new guy in the mix out of Miami, and he's not alone. They just offered in the past day or so another outside linebacker, Caden Johnson, from up in St. Paul, Minnesota. Relatively local guy, Edrin Cooper, another linebacker from Covington who's committed to Oklahoma. They stay on him. He had a chance to visit campus on Saturday, and he's someone that I think they see as someone that can make an impact for this defense in kind of that, you know, flexible linebacker type role, playing some inside, some outside. And there are a few guys like that, and they just, I guess, they see the importance of getting after opposing passers. I mean, you hear oftentimes about potentially the two most important parts of football, particularly the way that LSU's playing now, are protecting the passer, getting after the passer, and they haven't had a great pass rush necessarily in recent years. They were able to kind of manufacture some things, especially when Kalon went down last year, to find enough success. But that's an area where they know that they can continue to improve. And so you see them continue trying to add to that. It does get interesting though, just because of the offensive line and running back numbers, because they're pretty low right now for this class. But I think they feel like if they can find another guy at each of those positions, find the first running back for this class, which may look may look a little bit different from what we were thinking at one point. They, you know, they're going to continue to chase Zach Evans and see how that goes. And if it's not Zach, I'm interested to see what the backup plan ends up being, if it's Rashad Johnson or a potentially an out-of-state guy, just depending on how some things continue to develop and who they think fits the direction that the offense is going. And then on the offensive line, I think they'll still try and add a guy, you know, potentially Ty Crawford, potentially the big guy in Colorado, Andrew Gentry, that we talked about a couple weeks ago when they extended the offer to him. But I don't know that they see themselves getting much more on the offensive line this year, and certainly the way some things have gone with the current roster of offensive linemen. You see Ed Ingram coming back this week. Cardell is going to end up, you would think, redshirting this season, and so kind of extending his eligibility farther into the future, and so they'll kind of rely a little bit more on some of that. They see some of these pass rushing options and feel like some of them are just too talented to not, you know, still pursue the potential of bringing them to Baton Rouge. So some of that's going to be really interesting to watch as we get closer to actual official signing days, because they're involved with a lot of guys, a lot of different positions, and as we've talked about for a while now, they're down to just two current spots. So there may be some shuffling at some point.
Talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com, recruiting analyst, reporter extraordinaire. Jarrett, let's talk about O's comment yesterday, which I found amusing, and it drew some chuckles from his weekly press conference when someone asked him about recruiting, and he pulled out his phone and said how quickly these recruits, especially offensive skill position players, are now returning his phone calls on the recruiting trail. What do you make of all that?
Yeah, and that's some of that goes back to what I was saying about really enjoying what's happening with Joe and the performance that he's having. His name is being mentioned constantly in conversations with Tua and with Jalen Hurts and all of these guys that are considered the best at that position. And Joe Burrow is playing as well as any of them right now, and part of that too is the wide receivers are catching the ball as well as LSU wide receivers have caught the ball since Odell and Jarvis, probably certainly early in the season, and still a long way to go. You've seen that group be more sure-handed than many LSU teams for quite a while now, and you've seen so many more of them be involved than you're typically used to. You had four more guys catch their first passes on Saturday, and so the number of different receivers involved is exciting for the skill position guys too, and so it is really funny, because usually at this time of the season you have people being critical of the LSU offense, and so as much prestige and, you know, excitement as the LSU program as a whole has carried, sometimes it's a little bit of a challenge to be convincing the quarterbacks and wide receivers that there's a big role for them, an active role, and that they can come to LSU and do some of the same things that you see them doing. You see guys doing at some of these other big programs, like, you know, like in Oklahoma for years, or in Alabama for a few more years recently, on the offensive side of the ball. And now LSU's throwing the ball around as well as anyone, and you see constantly how excited these wide receivers and quarterbacks are for that potential, because LSU could have some success getting some of those guys anyway, even when they were being consistently criticized for not throwing the ball often or well, and now they're doing that. You know, I saw somebody make a joke the other day that watching LSU throw the ball in one of those first couple of games was like the moment in Happy Gilmore where Happy finally learns how to putt and kind of puts it all together and everyone else is on notice. And I thought that was funny from the football standpoint, but I think it's probably even more true from the recruiting standpoint, where you look at the success that they've had recruiting some guys on offense despite some of those shortcomings. And now all of a sudden they're averaging 55 points a game. Joe Burrow has three of the top eight passing performances in LSU history and is in the Heisman running. As much as people in Louisiana look back at that 2001 Rohan season, I know, you know, I haven't looked at Rohan's third game that season, but Joe's Texas total was almost as much as Rohan had had through two games total, and then Joe came out and threw another 373. And so there's a lot of things happening that make it a lot easier for O and Ensminger and Brady and company to recruit right now, from the quarterback on out to all those weapons all over the place, because Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, and Terrace Marshall Jr. are also already pretty poised to have a pretty elite LSU receiving season. If they end up each surpassing the 400-yard mark, it would be, I think, the sixth time that LSU has had three receivers over 400 yards, and they'll probably have that done by the Florida game, if not sooner, the way that they've been playing, because they were both all three of them were up pretty high even after two games.
Wrapping things up here with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jarrett, what about defensive back? Because depth has been an issue so far this season for the Tigers, and they have Derek Stingley Jr. He's special. They have some other guys, but I keep hearing that depth is an issue. Depth is an issue, especially at cornerback. So if depth is an issue, I take it it's going to be a priority for this 2020 class, yes? Cornerback and defensive back, or no?
So, the DB situation, I think you're probably looking at, the guys that are committed right now, which they have Elias Ricks from California, who's now down at IMG, Major Burns here locally from Madison Prep, Lorando Johnson from Lancaster, Texas, and then Jordan Tolles, the big two-sport safety from up in the Baltimore area. Those, I think, are that group. If they think they can get another guy that is an elite guy, I'm sure they'll see if they can figure out a way to make that work. But that's a position where they seem to be more set maybe than others. As much as kind of like we were talking about, as much as we've looked at the needs at offensive line, running back, they continue to go after some guys in that defensive front. I haven't heard as much as recently with regards to the secondary, but they do, they do see the big group they brought in for this 2019 class having a chance to really progress and all make an impact. It's going to be, I think, particularly interesting to watch at safety, actually, because they brought in so many corners, and then they bring in Elias and Major, and look at those as two guys that can be shut down corners for them in the years to come. But when you see some of the depth at safety already becoming a little bit of an issue now with the news that Todd Harris is going to be out for the rest of this year, and really, I think of this 2020 group, you look at Jordan Tolles as a really talented safety prospect, but the other guys really, I think, you look at more as corners or nickels. In Lorando's case, I think he could play a variety of places in that secondary. So that, the safety position is another one that I think is going to be intriguing to see how they handle that moving forward, because you're seeing depth potentially be an issue right now, and there's only so much help currently lined up for that position moving forward.
Jarrett, appreciate your insight as always, brother. Tell the folks what's coming up at TigerDetails.com for you with your byline, man. What can they look forward to this week?
Yeah, just had the more in-depth grades from the Northwestern State game go up early this morning, about 6 o'clock. Those started to hit the website. I'm looking forward, for me, as much as anything else the rest of the way. I mean, we'll have some coverage of Orgeron and some more stories leading up to this Vanderbilt game and opening SEC play. I'm excited to get back out to a couple high school games this week with Catholic and U High on Friday night. Jaquel and Roy obviously involved in that. A couple other guys worth keeping up with for LSU fans and for UL fans. And then on Saturday, one that I always get excited about with Carr and Easton battling down in New Orleans on Saturday night. And get a chance to go see Rashad and see Cedric Van Pran and Tyge Hill and some of those guys on both sides of the ball that will likely some of them will end up playing in purple and gold as well as making their way out to Lafayette or some of these other schools around the state in the next couple of years.
Well, Jarrett, keep up the great work, my friend. We'll talk to you next week, brother.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Red.
It's Jarrett Rozier, Tiger Details, all things recruiting, LSU Cajuns, and the entire state of Louisiana. We're going to take a quick time out. We'll wrap up this hour when we come back here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
RP3.
Good morning. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. Right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can also find us on the simulcast if you want to see this big, beautiful mug in high definition. A Stadium Network 32.1 or LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. On today's show, we've talked recruiting, LSU, and statewide recruiting. We've talked about the Raging Cajun football team. Billy Napier and his staff improved to 2-1 over the weekend. They're gearing up for a difficult road challenge when UL travels to Ohio to take on the Ohio Bobcats this Saturday. We broke it all down, but we also talk New Orleans Saints. Where do they go from here? Confirmation now with Drew Brees going to miss at least 6 weeks. He is getting a second opinion. I doubt that second opinion is going to result in him coming back after only 2 weeks, though. We have a new poll question up there for you right now at 1037thegame.com. With Drew missing at least 6 weeks, how many wins do the Saints need to get in that stretch to remain in playoff contention? Is it 5? Is it 4? Is it 3? Or is it 2? I already told you how I feel. I think it's 3. They go 3-3 in that stretch. There'll be a 500 ball club. They get Drew Brees back, and then they have to face the bulk of the NFC South schedule on the back end of the schedule with a healthy Drew Brees. I think that sets up nicely for the Saints to remain in playoff contention. We'll ask that same question, though, to our next guest. He's the man, one of the co-hosts of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He joins us every Tuesday. It's the one and only, our good friend Andrew Juge. Andrew, let's start off with, I'm not going to ask you how you're feeling this morning, brother, because I know you probably still feel crappy, but let's go back to Sunday. When you saw the injury, you saw it happen, how'd you feel?
It was tough, no doubt about it, Raymond. And I think the pervading thought among Saints fans, as you watch it visually on the TV, I think the thing that's burned in all of our memories forever, and I think it probably scars us for life, is Brees attempting to pick up that football. We used to see it on the broadcast very, very quickly where he tries to pick up the ball and it immediately falls out of his hand. He couldn't even grip it. So that was disturbing. And we actually had our show last night, the Saints Happy Hour podcast, which is free. And if you look for us online, you can find us. But one of our co-hosts, Dave, he mentioned that it was like watching Superman die of kryptonite poisoning. And it was funny for him to say that, but it kind of hit home a little bit because the Saints have had the luxury, Raymond, for so long of having Drew Brees healthy for since 2006. I mean, we're going on almost 15 years of this where we have been able to count on Drew Brees always being healthy. It's been a stagnant thing. It's been a consistent thing that we have seen throughout this time period. And so sometimes you forget that he's human almost. And unfortunately, it's just crazy that it would happen on a play like that where it kind of just feels like a fluke thing. This wasn't a hamstring injury as he was running. This wasn't a knee getting bent by a defender in a weird way. It was just, it was just wrong contact. And, this is tough. This is tough. But it's interesting that it kind of falls on the heels of Sean Payton's announcement. I will say that, and him getting the contract extension. And I wonder if on some level, obviously this is disappointing for Sean Payton and frustrating and scary, but on some level, he's a competitor. He's got an ego. He's got pride. and he's one of the highest paid coaches in the NFL. Well, now he's going to get a chance to earn it. And I think it's one of those things where if you're the best coach, you enjoy challenges, and this is certainly one, and he's going to get a chance to prove that he's worth every penny he's getting paid.
We're talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. All right, Andrew, I'll ask you the same question I've asked our listeners to comment on with our poll question. Let's say Drew misses the six games. I think he's missing more, but let's say it's just the six games. What do the Saints need to do in that time period, win-wise, to remain in playoff contention?
Yeah, I agree with what you said. I mean, you said 3-3, which would put the Saints at 4-4. Interestingly, the Saints would only have played one division game at that point. They will only play the Bucs once at home, and every division game is kind of after that. So, you know, at 4-4, you maybe give yourself a margin of two games where you'd have to go 6-2 to finish the year. But that feels possible with Breeze, depending on how he comes back and how he looks when he's back. So it gives you a little bit of a buffer, a little bit of a margin there, but you still have everything to play for because you can still win the division. And I do think the NFC South is weak enough this year that 10-6, maybe 9-7 could win this division, depending on how these teams fare as the season progresses. So, you know, I think at 3-5, it would be a tough mountain to climb because you'd have almost no margin for error. At 4-4, going .500, I think you'd still have anything to play for, and obviously anything better than that would be a huge surprise and, a really pleasant surprise. You know, unfortunately for the Saints, Raymond, you look at Seattle coming up on the road this week. I don't know that I would have felt good about this game with Drew Brees at quarterback. You look at how Brees has played in Seattle the last few times he's been there, and I understand every year teams are different, but the Seahawks are 2-0, and they've been playing some decent ball so far this year, so I think that would have been a challenge in itself. I don't know that I would have expected Drew Brees to play great in that game. And then the following week, you have the Cowboys at home who completely shut Drew Brees down last year. So I don't know that you would have expected Drew Brees to have a fantastic game in that game either. And so I don't know how realistic it is to expect much out of Teddy Bridgewater in these games. These are very, very tough assignments, and you know, unfortunately for him to get thrown into the fold like this and have these kind of games, it really is baptism by fire. I think realistically 1-3 is a pretty likely path over these next 2 weeks, which really means after that the schedule gets a little softer. But whether it's Bridgewater or maybe Taysom Hill, they're going to have to start winning some games after that.
We're talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Let's talk about Teddy. I've said this over and over again, Andrew. I'm not ready to throw Teddy out with the bathwater, as they used to say, and not based on the game against Carolina last year where he was going against the number ones for the Panthers and most of the starters were sitting. He was still recovering, still trying to learn that offense. I know he did not look great on Sunday, but neither did the offensive line, nor did the wide receiving core for that matter, okay? And they were playing the team that played for the Super Bowl a year ago. How many games, in your opinion, do you think Teddy has here to prove himself as the guy that the Saints paid all the money for, making him the highest paid backup quarterback? How many games do you need to see before making the decision on Teddy Bridgewater to be a serviceable backup?
Yeah, so I'd take a step back, and the first thing I'd say from a psychological standpoint is it's important for Saints fans to take a step back, and the Saints right now are not a Super Bowl contender. Now, if Brees comes back and he's playing great and he looks totally recovered, then maybe that changes. But right now, when that injury happened, I think we have to accept as fans that the game has changed. That's the reality of the NFL. Sometimes it changes fast. But now they have a backup quarterback in Teddy Bridgewater, and I just don't believe, as it stands right now, the Saints are competing for a Super Bowl title. I just don't think they have the talent right now to do that unless Teddy Bridgewater starts to learn and he starts to play at a high level. So we'll see if he can get there. To answer your question, I think it's three games. I think we have to be patient with Bridgewater, and it's one of those things where I know that fans are in a hurry to figure this out. I think some fans maybe think they've already figured it out. But you have to give guys like this a chance to learn on the job, because the reality is, if this is it for Breeze, let's say he can't come back at all this year, then you've got to give this time to develop. Players can improve week to week. And so, you know, I would give the caveat that if he burns this thing to the ground, Raymond, and if it's 37-0 in Seattle in the third quarter and he's throwing four picks, then obviously you put Taysom Hill in and you make a switch there. But absent something like that, if the Saints are competing and they're kind of hanging in there and he doesn't look great, but he looks okay, then I think three games is the minimum you have to give him. Because, again, in talking about those first two assignments at Seattle or at home against the Cowboys, I don't know that there's many quarterbacks outside of Drew Brees that do well in those situations. I don't know that Brees would play lights out in those situations. Those are really tough assignments. But I think if he can get through those two games and then the third game is at home against Tampa, if he plays well against Tampa and gets the Saints a win and you feel like he's making progress, he's starting to develop a rhythm, he's getting some confidence, and he's starting to get a little mojo going. You know, let's say the Saints lose the first two, but he plays okay. Not great, but okay. And then he plays pretty well. Let's say he throws for 280 and three touchdowns against the Bucs, and the Saints win that game and they're sitting at 2-3. Then I think you feel good about keeping Teddy in there and moving along. I think if you go 0-3 through these next three and he's just not up to snuff through those three games, then maybe you think about making a switch. But yeah, I think, again, answering your question, I think the rope you give him is at least three games.
Talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He joins us here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. All right, Andrew, obviously they face a very good Seattle team on the road this Sunday. Besides the Breeze injury, and what we could spend a whole hour on them jobbing the Saints once again, the officials, with the touchdown that was taken off the board. What about the secondary? What's going on with the Saints secondary? Because on the surface, it sure does appear that these guys who are supposed to be young corner pieces, cornerstones of the back end of the defense, are regressing year to year. Marcus Williams and Marshawn Lattimore spring to mind. What's going on with them? Is it a scheme thing? Are they playing too much zone and not enough man? What's going on with the secondary?
You know, I don't know that I agree. I mean, I think Eli Apple, first of all, your number two corner, kind of is what he is. And I haven't seen anything from him. I mean, maybe the tackling has been disappointing. So if there's one area that I would say has been really poor through two games, in the tackling. Now, I think part of that is a league-wide issue where there's no more two-a-days in training camp. There's just limited time in pads in practice. And I think it's a league-wide issue. The tackling has become worse and worse in the NFL by function of the practice schedule and the CBA, and there are rules in place. And I just think less practice means worse tackling. So there's a link there that is undeniable. At the same time, you can improve on that. And I think that's a problem the Saints need to focus on, because I think, by and large, the tackling was actually pretty good last year. I will say, I think P.J. Williams has done what we expect of him. He is what he is. And he's a player that is physical in the box, in short spaces. He plays very well. I think we've seen him in coverage in the red zone do really well. I think he struggles with faster receivers as he's going down the field. And so he is what he is, and we've seen that through two games. Eli Apple, physical corner, he's going to get some flags for illegal contact, maybe holds, but he's a physical guy that can also make plays, and I believe we've seen that through two games. So nothing surprises me too much there. You know, Marcus Williams, I would say, is a guy that got an interception the first week of the season. He can make plays. He was very close to getting an interception in this Rams game. And he's a guy that can make plays on the ball, but he's going to miss a tackle here or there. No surprise there. I think we're seeing what we normally get from him. I think the thing that stands out is Lattimore. And I think through two games, his performances have been pretty miserable, honestly. And so that's the one thing that really stands out to me. And he's supposed to be the one that's the shutdown corner. He's supposed to be the superstar in that secondary.
He's supposed to be the cornerstone, Andrew. He's supposed to be the cornerstone.
That's right. And he really has not been. And you look at his performance against Hopkins, he had his moments in that game, but overall I would say that Hopkins got the better of him in week one. And then in week two, you just see Brandon Cooks beat him on the deep ball. You see Brandon Cooks on a three-yard pass into the end zone beat him, out-physical him for the ball. Now, that should never happen. Lattimore should not get out-physical by Brandon Cooks at the goal line. That should never happen. And
it's one thing, Andrew, the week before when DeAndre Hopkins out-physicaled him and took the touchdown above him in the back of the end zone, right? That's one thing because Hopkins is a top three wide receiver in this league. But he's getting beat up by Brandon Cooks.
Yeah, we saw that. And then later in the game, he was on Cooper Kupp. He not only gets beat, but then misses the tackle, which results in the big 66-yard gain down to the one-yard line. So I thought this was a pretty miserable performance by Lattimore. And unfortunately, he's going to have to do – I don't know if he's injured. I don't know if he's lost confidence. Once again, I think he's off to a slow start, which was an issue last year for him. But I just think there's a reality now that, hey, Lattimore comes with a reputation based on being defensive rookie of the year, being a first round pick. A lot of people think he's a great player, but I have not seen it through two games. And if the secondary is going to get better, it has to start with him, like you said, being that cornerstone.
Andrew, appreciate the insight as always, brother. Enjoy the rest of your week. And we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Sounds good. Thanks, Raymond.
It's Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast joining us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, talking all things Hoodats. He agrees. He says, look, Marcus Williams, P.J. Williams, those, they are what they are. Eli Apple is what he is. But Lattimore is curious, and he seems to continue to regress for whatever reason. We got to take a quick timeout. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
RP3.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can also find us on Stadium Network 32.1 as well as LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We do have a new poll question up for you guys to go vote on at 1037thegame.com. It's very simple. With Drew Brees out, what do the Saints need to do to remain in playoff contention? For the Saints to remain in playoff contention, how many games do they need to win if Drew Brees misses the full six games? Your choices are 5 games, 4 games, 3 games, or 2 games. Right now, leading the pack is 4 games with 45.5% of the vote, followed behind 3 games, 36.4%, and then 5 games, 18.2% of the vote. So I think it's just 3 games. That's my personal thought on that. I think it's 3 games. I think that's what they're going to have to do to make sure to get that done, is just the 3 games. I think if they're 500 by the time Drew Brees comes back, I think they will be fine. They have the entire NFC South schedule with the exception of 1 game against Tampa. It's all on the back end of the schedule. So if they can be a 500 ball club by the time Drew Brees comes back, and they got their leader and they have number 9 under center, once again, they face off against the likes of Carolina Panthers, Atlanta Falcons, in 1 game against the Bucs, then they have a great opportunity to win that division and make the playoffs. And they can do it as a 9-7 team and host a home playoff game and make some noise come postseason. Because the only thing that matters is right at the end. And we've seen wild card teams that play in the wild card round, make runs to the Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl even. We've seen wild card teams even win the Super Bowl. So it's not impossible. The sky is not falling as of yet. But you got to have faith, Saints fans, that Sean Payton is going to tailor make this offense around Teddy Bridgewater and help him succeed. But the offensive line is going to have to do a better job, and so is the wide receiving core. Hey, just a reminder, swing by Pete's on Johnston tonight because it's the Prep Power Hour back with Bumper to Bumper Sports. The good brother Ben Love will be broadcasting live from Pete's on Johnston from 4 to 7 o'clock today, as it'll be the second week of the Prep Power Hour. Last week we kicked things off with Southside High. This week it's going to be the Terlings Catholic Rebels. They'll be in tow. The fan base will be there to support the Rebs. Once again, the Prep Power Hour returns tonight at Pete's on Johnston. The good brother Ben Love will host Bumper to Bumper Sports from 4 to 7 live. They're all at Pete's on Johnston. And then the Prep Power Hour starts at 6 o'clock, full hour, all about the Terlings Catholic Rebels. So make sure to check it out tonight on 103.7 The Game for the Prep Power Hour. They're on Bumper to Bumper Sports, or you can go join the good brother Ben Love live out there at Pete's on Johnston.
R.P. 3.
In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you are a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for another reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood. But sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every single year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it, guys. Before you dig, just call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig. Tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service. And to promote public safety, Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game remind you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's time now to touch base on a little UL athletics. And it's not football, no, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to give you a little volleyball. That's right. Yesterday, I was able to catch up and have an interview with Heather Mazzetas Fondo, the longtime head coach of the Raging Cajun volleyball program. She's in her 12th season, coach is, and they're gearing up for another big tournament this weekend out at Florida, University of Florida. They just wrapped up one at the University of Oklahoma. They started off the month with a four-match winning streak. They're 4-6 overall on the season. They played a lot of tough competition. They'll start conference play next week. Got their Texas swing up, Texas State and UT Arlington before coming home for their Sun Belt Conference opener at home there inside Earl K. Long Gym against App State. Here's my interview with Coach Fondo from yesterday.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III, and you're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. It's time for us to now head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. She is entering her 12th season as the head volleyball coach here at UL. It's the one and only Heather Mazzetas Fondo. Coach, talk a little bit about your program. You guys have started off the season 4-6. You've been competitive in a lot of matches, but you began the month with a four-match winning streak. So tell me a little bit about your girls at this point right now.
Well, I tell you, we started the season with two home tournaments. So our first seven matches were at home. And the first weekend, I think we were just trying to figure out what offense to run, and the one we were running didn't work so well. So the second weekend, first weekend we go 0-3, second weekend we go 3-0. Then we had a midweek with Southern Miss, which made us 4-3, and then this weekend we went and played three Power Fives. Hung tight, hung close, but couldn't get over the hump against any of those three. So that's kind of where we are right now in terms of our record, but our team is feeling super positive about where we are, and we know what we need to work on.
Coach, let's talk a little bit about last weekend. You were up in Oklahoma taking on the Sooners in their little tournament. This weekend you're going to be traveling over to Gainesville to take on Florida in their tournament. What do these early season non-conference tournaments like this against elite competition, what do they do for your program?
Well, the most important thing that they do is prepare us for conference season. You know, everything is about the Sun Belt Conference and our record in that. And I knew that this season, our first two weekends out, we play the top four teams in the conference. And so I wanted to make sure that our last two free weekends that we could choose who we play, that we're playing tough opponents and people that will prepare us for those top four in the conference. So we, again, this weekend we went to OU and we played Georgia Tech and OU and Arizona State. Yeah. And then this next weekend we go to Florida. They're ranked number 7 in the nation right now. And we also play Liberty and Northern Arizona. So there'll be good tests for us when we start out with Texas State, UT Arlington, App State, and Coastal, all first four Sun Belt matches that we have.
Coach, talk a little bit about starting conference play here in a few weeks against, as you said, the top four teams in the conference. You have to start it on the road with your Texas swing, with Texas State and UT Arlington, and then you come home for your conference home opener there at Earl K. Long against App State on October 4th. What are some of the challenges of starting off so strong against the top-level competition like that?
Well, I think the challenges are on both sides, because I don't think any of us are going to hit our peak yet. And so when we see Texas State and UT Arlington later on in the season, I think we'll all be different teams. But, you know, we're all catching each other early, and it's going to be who's coming to fight the hardest. And Texas State on the road is always a tough team. UTA on the road is always a tough team. And so we just have to make sure that we are super prepared, not only in game plan, but in mental preparation, to know that we can beat those teams.
We're talking with Coach Mazeas Fondo. She's the longtime head coach here with the UL Raging Cajuns. She joins us on the Harco Equipment Hotline. Coach, let's talk about some of the impact the newcomers have made for you. I know talking to people around the program, Celeste Darling and Hannah Ramirez, these are newcomers that have made a huge impact. Talk a little bit about their development and the fact that they've been able to do so quickly.
Well, I tell you, you know, Hannah Ramirez is a junior college transfer, and she has come in and just sewn up our libero spot. She's doing a fantastic job. She's made the all-tournament team, all three tournaments that we've been to. This last weekend, she averaged 6.83 digs per set, almost 7, which is unheard of. She's really doing a great job anchoring our defense for us. And then Celeste Darling, I knew that she would be a great freshman for us, but she's been so far the surprise of the season. And she's a right side kid. She's about 6 feet tall, but she's super smart, has a heavy arm, and is our kill leader currently. She also gets the ball most because she is our kill leader, but definitely handling that pressure really well. And against the three teams that we played this weekend, really did a good job. She hit 230 on the weekend, which is just like a batting average, you know, right, which is pretty good for a freshman against teams that are bigger than some of the teams we're going to be seeing in the future.
Talk a little bit about the local talent that you have on this team. I know you have Avery Bro and Lexi Hebert, among others. Tell me how well they've been performing for you, and how important is it for you to make sure to have local talent, girls that are from the area throughout Acadiana, representing the UL Raging Cajun volleyball team?
You know, I think part of our recruiting philosophy, part of my recruiting philosophy, is to make sure we have the best local talent here that we can, necessary in the positions that we need them. And, you know, Lexi Hebert from Turlings and Avery Bro from STM are both, you know, all-state performers in the state of Louisiana, but they're starters for us now and have been for the last 3 years or 2 years. And but what that does is it keeps those teams and those coaches and all of those players very familiar with our program. And I think we've had numerous players in the past that are still here coaching high school. You know, Sarah Robichaux, who used to be Sarah Mosikowski, now coaches at New Iberia High School. And Caroline Dufresne is at Lafayette High School, and she played for me. And, you know, we just have lots of kids around here that are local. Even though Sarah wasn't local, she married Tony Robichaux's son, Austin, so now she is local. And, you know, it's such a joy to see all of our players come back, but also to know that those are people that come to our games still, and that's what local talent does for us. It increases our home game population, and also just the investment that any of the Lafayette people have within our program, knowing that we want local talent on our club. We've got a kid this year, JUCO transfer, at least Bronco, from David Thibodeau, and she went off to junior college in Kansas, came back, and, you know, she's a little bit of a sleeper, but she's a fantastic athlete. athlete, and she's really going to help us in the future. I know that.
Coach, talk about, you've been doing this now for 25 years, 12th season now as the head coach here, but you've been part of the program for 25 years. Is it just as enjoyable now as it was when you first started off? And if so, how?
So this is my 12th season at UL. I've been coaching college for 25 years. And, you know, it's, the enjoyment is different. I think that, I think as a younger coach, when I was coaching junior college, you know, it was all about furthering my career and where can I get to, and how many wins. And, you know, wins are always important. No question. That's not the issue. But I think now more it's about my relationship with my team. And I feel like when I have a better relationship with them, there's a lot more trust. And so they're going to play hard and understand and trust what I'm saying. And so I think now as an older coach, and I do mentor younger coaches within our volleyball community, and just getting them to see that if you, like today I have lunch with two of my players, you know, I try to have lunch two or three times a week with a couple players, but just getting to know them on a personal level helps so much, especially for today's athlete, which is completely different from when I played. And even when I started coaching, you know, it's not like, do what I say, do it now. Cause today's athlete is like, I'm not going to do anything for you unless you tell me why, you know, do you like me and why? And so, which is fine. I understand that. But that's the part I've really enjoyed most though, is really getting to know my kids and our team and really making that a priority.
Wrapping things up here. Coach, talk a little bit about the atmosphere at Earl K. Long Gym. I know it gives you guys a great advantage, and it's an historic venue, and it's revered with people here across Acadiana. What's it like when you guys are able to take the court inside Earl K. Long?
Well, it's such a great home court advantage. You know, the fans are wonderful and it's so loud. Like literally you can't even hear yourself think. We have sign language for everything. It's almost like I used to coach college softball. So it's almost like I'm signing to my setters on what plays to run and what things to do because you can't hear anything. And, you know, our fans support us so well. We average 400 to 500 fans per match. And now with our discounted, concessions, our $2 beers at Earl K. Long Gym, it really is just wonderful. And we sign autographs after every home game. So, you know, we support our youth, and the girls get to meet the young girls and young volleyball players and take pictures with them. And I think it's definitely a good family environment and experience.
One final question. What are you looking, being a veteran coach the way you are, obviously, you're working on things throughout the entire season. So what are you hoping to see from your team this coming weekend right before you guys prepare for conference tournament? Are you wanting to see them turn a corner and improve in certain areas? Because, you know, at this point of the season, or is it still a little far off?
No, it's not far off. You know, we're gearing up for conference play. So this last weekend is our last weekend to kind of test new things, you know. And I think that what I'm looking for out of this weekend is to find our mental toughness. And we are struggling a little bit on the consistency side after point 18. So can we do it maybe after point 25? I don't know, you know, because in the beginning of the season, it was after point 13. So now we've gained 5 more points. Right. So let's gain 7 more now. And so, because like this weekend, I said, if we played to 15, we would have gone 3-0 because we did some good things. But finding that overall, like, hey, we can work with the lead. We're supposed to be winning. And so, yeah, we can beat these schools. So let's just go do it.
Coach.
That was UL head volleyball coach Heather Mazatis Fondo. Caught up with her yesterday there at UL. It's early in the season, but her team is still trying to find its way. Got a bunch of newcomers on there. A bunch of Acadiana former stars are represented on her team. And they got a big tournament this weekend against the likes of Florida and others before starting Sun Belt Conference play, which they'll have to do on the road with the Texas Swing before coming home, I want to say, on October 4th for App State there at Earl K. Long Gym. We appreciate Coach for her time and wish her and the rest of the Raging Cajun volleyball team the best of luck this weekend. We're going to take a timeout, our final timeout of the day. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game.
RP3.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. I am your host, Raymond Parts III. And we are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's time now for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He is the lead play-by-play announcer for CBS Sport Network's coverage of college basketball and college football. He also calls games for CBS Sports, including the NCAA Division I Men's Basketball Championship games. And he'll be on the call this Saturday for Auburn at Texas A&M, which will be kicking off at 2:30 p.m. on CBS. It's the one and only Carter Blackburn joins us. Carter, good morning to you. How are you?
Hey, Grayman, how are you?
Doing great, man, doing great. Bit of a dud of a weekend last weekend, not a single top 25 matchup, but things get far more interesting and will be far more competitive this weekend. Just give me your thoughts so far. We're nearly a month into the season. What teams or players have stood out to you so far?
Ohio State would be pretty much at the top of the list. I mean, you've got your clearly we're living in the era of Clemson and Alabama right now, and the LSU Tigers have the most exciting, thrilling, one of the biggest wins of the year against the Texas Longhorns. That was an electric college football game. That was one where no matter who you're rooting for, or even if you're a fan of college football, like that was an elite game, elite atmosphere, and certainly Joe Burrow played like an elite quarterback. I mean, the Tigers are very, very impressive. They have the most impressive win of the year in college football. Although Clemson's win over Texas A&M was pretty impressive in itself, considering there were a lot of people saying that the Aggies were ready to contend and upset Clemson, and this was going to be a topsy-turvy moment in the sport in 2019. The Tigers pretty much took it to the Aggies, but Ohio State's they've been really, really dominant both sides of the football. And but that's the fun part about it is we haven't even hit October. I mean, we're almost just getting started in the season, and it's already been a thrilling one. I opened up with Arizona and Hawaii, which was obviously a fun trip, Honolulu. But that was a game that came down to a zeros on the clock, 1 yard away, Khalil Tate just short of the end zone. So it's been a fun season thus far, and it feels like we are just getting started.
We're talking with CBS Sports' Carter Blackburn. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Carter, you mentioned the big boys. I don't want to talk about them just briefly here. Trevor Lawrence did not have a great game to start off with. He struggled. He made some big plays, though, last week for Clemson. Alabama, meanwhile, too, is putting up huge numbers. But that defense, it's injury-plagued, right? They're missing guys left and right. Guys are dropping off left and right. Any concerns for the two big boys, the two giants, Bama and Clemson, so far this season?
I think at this point, if you're, and of course you are, and of course that's what the two head coaches are doing is nitpicking or trying to find weaknesses. But the reality is, Alabama defensively, they are so stacked that they're built to withstand injuries. I mean, the twos for Alabama would contend for the SEC West title. The backups and the starters would contend for the AFC East title, and that's where Alabama is. That's where Clemson is. So I think that Trevor Lawrence hasn't been perfect, but gosh, he's been terrific. And like I said, even though he wasn't perfect against the Aggies, that's still one of the more impressive wins of the year. So I think at this point you're looking for reasons to doubt that Alabama and Clemson are the dominant forces in college football. And until somebody proves that wrong, then that's who we're looking up at. And hey, maybe it is those LSU Tigers that are poised to knock either Alabama or potentially Clemson down the road from that spot. But we're living in the era of Alabama and an Alabama alum coaching the Clemson Tigers at the top of college football.
We're talking with Carter Blackburn of CBS Sports. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Carter, I want to talk a little bit about Jalen Hurts. When you hear him talk after games, before games, hell, during games, he sounds like a Nick Saban disciple. It sounds like a head coach out there, and yet he's putting up numbers as you would expect a Lincoln Riley-coached quarterback to do. Are you been surprised whatsoever of the immense amount of success Jalen Hurts has had in that offense for Oklahoma?
Yes, I am surprised. I'm surprised that it has been such a smooth transition and smooth marriage, because it is a very different offense. And clearly, you know, Jalen, we just talked about how the backups at Alabama would be contenders of the SEC West. Well, he's a guy who got beat out at Alabama and is now putting up incredible numbers. And you're right, we talk about the elites of college football. I think the Oklahoma Sooners are exactly jumping up and down in Norman, Oklahoma, saying there is an elite program right here in the Big 12. And please don't overlook the Big 12, which right now, because of foibles elsewhere, mostly for the Texas Longhorns, the Big 12 has been kind of looking up at the SEC and Clemson and the ACC. So, yes, I am surprised that it's been that smooth of a transition for Jalen Hurts, but I think we've proven Baker Mayfield and beyond that this is a, and Kyler Murray, that this is a very quarterback friendly offense at Oklahoma, and it's fitting.
One final question for Carter Blackburn, CBS Sports play by play man. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Real quick, Carter, your game that you're going to be calling this weekend, that's the A&M Auburn game. Who's this a bigger game for, A&M or Auburn?
I think that A&M has a bigger statement to make, which is which they have the opportunity at Clemson. I think Auburn is the team that is perennially a contender in the SEC West. It's been a while since the days of Johnny Manziel, but Texas A&M has been a contender in the SEC West, and if the Aggies are able to pull that off on Saturday, home game, then October 12 versus Alabama becomes a very big game. And if the Aggies lose on Saturday to Auburn, then the story is, why is Texas A&M not ready to contend in the SEC West? So I would say Aggies, especially at home right now, more to be said for Texas A&M on Saturday.
Carter, appreciate the time, brother. Keep up the great work and enjoy this weekend's game.
Thanks, Raymond. Have a good one.
That's Carter Blackburn from CBS Sports joining us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. That's going to do it for this edition of RP3 and Company. I want to thank all of our guests. Stay tuned. Chip Shots with Rob Spires is up next. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
RP3.